Hi there. So in 2012, my boss kind of yells across the hall, "Hey, Lisa, you want to go to Africa?" I'm like, yes. What's the catch here? Dr. Julio Mercator from the Department of Archaeology at the University of Calgary had approached my museum about collaborating on a grant application for a project in Zimbabwe. And these are the objectives he presented to me. He said, "This is what I want you to do." I'm a pretty experienced world traveler and pretty adventurous, and I don't have any family commitments, so I really jumped on this opportunity. Kind of just fell into my lap, to be honest. So with funding from the Faculty of Arts and the University's International Grants Committee and the support of our departments, we were able to embark on this project. And luckily, I was allowed to take 5 weeks away from work without having to use vacation time and still get paid. I'll be talking strictly about the museum side of this project, although Dr. Mercator was leading a dig concurrently. So my role was to come up with a cataloging system, figure out a way to rehouse all the artifacts that were in decaying boxes and bags, institute some best practices in collections management, and plan how we might bring more awareness to this collection with public lectures in Zimbabwe, museum podcasts, websites, and so on. I really hadn't been given much of anything to go on. I had no photos of the space, the material I'd be dealing with, examples of old cataloging pages, or staffing levels that I would be dealing with. So off to Google I went, found out where I was going, a bit about archaeology in southern Africa, and most importantly for me, terminology and standards for archaeological material, specifically Stone Age material. My background is in European history and art history, and my cataloging duties at the Nickel relate to contemporary art, so this was completely out of my comfort zone. So communication with the staff at the museum in Harare, Zimbabwe was really difficult. Internet access is pretty much spotty or non-existent. Sometimes they could sit in one of those chairs, point their computer across the street to the national office, and maybe get a signal, but generally not. So a lot of my questions got answered, but a whole lot didn't. And so I just kind of had to prepare and estimate as best I could and just assume I could work it all out when I arrived. So we didn't have time to get special visas before we left, and we really weren't sure what to expect. We did have the backing of the National Museums and Monuments of Zimbabwe and letters of introduction. And as it turned out, there were no problems with customs and immigration on arrival. And we were told we could extend our four-week visas at an office downtown, no problem. Now, suffice to say, trying to extend your visa during an election campaign that's being monitored by human rights groups in Western countries, not quite as simple as first promised. There was a chance we were going to have to leave a week early, and so we spent a weekend frantically packing, training staff, Googling flights out on a Monday morning, that kind of thing. And it was all for naught. They did extend our visas, and they were probably using that weekend, the secret police, to check our credentials to see if we were who we said we were and not, you know, reporters or something like that. So in the end, I could stay. A little bit about Zimbabwe. Oops. There's about 13 million people, about 1.5 million in Harare. A very high literacy rate, very educated population. Life expectancy is only 55, and that's due to the AIDS crisis. An extremely, extremely poor country. Their economy collapsed in 2008. You know, think wheelbarrows full of money to buy a loaf of bread kind of thing. They do use the American dollar now, so it has stabilized, although they're still very, very poor. Zimbabwe gained their independence from Britain in 1980, and Robert Mugabe has been in charge since then. I'm on camera, so if you want to know anything about Robert Mugabe, I will go to Google. I'm not saying anything. Talking politics is a real no-go, even with people you're friends with. I could tell you a few stories, but, you know, come find me at the cocktail hour tonight. Victoria Falls is in Zimbabwe, and they have some of the most incredible wildlife parks and best-trained guides in Africa. If you're thinking of safari, it's actually a safer place to go than South Africa or Kenya, so I can't see enough good things about Zimbabwe, basically. So the museum itself has a staff of about 15 or 20. And most of the visitors are school groups. Going to the museum really isn't something Zimbabweans do outside of school visits. There are very few tourists in Harare proper. Occasionally one will come in. The guides at the museum are students, and they're very well informed. The exhibits are really outdated and tired. They definitely require some updating. to reflect more modern ideas of Southern African archaeology and museology. Oftentimes, there was no lights working, complete darkness. Some of them are from the 50s, that kind of thing. There's a huge number of archaeological sites in Zimbabwe. It's part of Eastern Africa. But most people are unaware of the data and the artifacts from this part of the world, even people who specialize in Southern African archaeology. The museum has about 3,000 boxes of material, just Stone Age material, and then probably could fill another 300 boxes worth. Current data is really minimal, and it's only in paper copy. So after we met up with curators and directors and so on, we just got to work. The first thing we did was number the shelving units so we could create a location register. Up to this point, material was just located via staff memory and a few labels on boxes. This photo doesn't do justice, actually. It's completely dark in the stacks because the only light in the room is from some windows. So one of my students is wearing one of my camping headlights up there. He was the bravest one to go up on the ladders. We did have some money in the budget for museum supplies, but since I didn't really know what I was facing in the volume, I just kind of had to make a best guess of what to bring. We brought some specialty boxes, acid-free tissue, coroplast sheets, marking pens and liquid label, cameras and memory cards, and a laptop. We purchased more supplies while there, photocopy paper and a printer, another laptop, cleaning supplies, that kind of thing. So we determined the best way to store collections data was in Excel on one of the laptops that we had purchased for the project. Museum database system just is not feasible at this time. Connections are super unreliable. The computers are ancient, no tech support, and viruses are a really big problem there as well. By putting the data into Excel, it can be searched, sorted, shared, and most importantly, kept up by the staff there. And, you know, maybe someday it could be imported into a museum system, but just not at this time. So I knew I'd have some students working on the project, so I kind of designed a basic cataloging page, it's there on the left, that they could work from directly. And then we also have some controlled vocabularies that we developed with the curatorial staff. The form actually was modified once there. I discovered they had a form, so we kind of combined them to best suit the project and the processes that we had set up. So about 6 to 8 students volunteered to work on this project. They were from the local university. And without them, it really would have been impossible to make much impact. It was a really great opportunity for them to learn more about Stone Age archaeology, which is not a focus of their studies, gain some work experience, and make contact in the museum. And, you know, as any museum person can tell you, being able to, like, handle the real thing in your hands, you know, can be really exciting. I think it did spark a bit of an interest in Stone Age archaeology for one or two. I don't know that it sparked any interest in museum cataloging. You know, I'm not a miracle worker here. Now, I found out at the very end of the project that they had to scrape up bus fare every day for nearly a month to come to the museum. And this is a real hardship for most of them. And had I known this from the start, I certainly would have put that into the budget. And it's something that I'm mindful of for any future projects. So we kind of set up a bit of an assembly line, and students would take on different tasks. And it was key with someone with a really good head for organization and detail, kind of kept things from going off the rails. And I had one student who I kept saying, Josh, you would make a really good registrar, just think about it. So our basic, we did a really basic level of catalog, and we just kind of wanted to get things on the books. Like, these things maybe have been in boxes for 50 or 60 years, and that's it. Nothing has been done with them. You know, more detailed information could be added at a later date by curatorial staff or researchers. So each object was given an accession number, and we did follow the numbering system that was in place at the museum. Each object was photographed with its accession number. Now, many of the students had never dealt with a digital camera before, and they said this was a really great experience, and this is kind of the job they all kind of fought over. This is the one they wanted to do the most. Some were better at it than others, but... And so each object was weighed, and it was measured. Now, the scale at the museum had not been calibrated, so I can't say that it's 100% reliable data, but it is a good starting point. Now, what little was known about the excavations could sometimes be found on these cards, and then this information was recorded on the forms and then into the Excel. This would definitely be another really good project to work on. Sometimes the information was contradictory to a note we would find in a box or outside of a box. There was no cross-referencing. I don't think I ever even got a handle really on how this worked. So previously, accession numbers had been written on the artifacts by using white house paint and a big felt pen. There was no regard for the size of the object or the placement of the number. So with small objects, we decided to store them in small bags, and their number would be included in the bag. And the hope is, if it goes apart from its bag, at least we have a photograph. The museum still wanted numbers to be written on the larger objects, so we compromised by using the archival material we brought with us and making them as small and inconspicuous as possible. Now, after that material runs out, they'll probably go back to white house paint, but, you know, you do what you can. The final step before putting the box back on the shelf was packing. The small artifacts went in plastic bags. The larger ones were wrapped in a bit of tissue for protection. We used the Coroplast that I brought to build dividers within the boxes to create a more efficient space and to kind of protect the artifacts. We definitely loaded the boxes much more than I'm normally comfortable with, but, you know, we just had so much material and so little resources and so little shelving space. And, well, I mean, this is the registrar's lament, right? So then all the information was taken off the form and entered into the Excel spreadsheet. And this is what I would spend most of my days doing, 8 hours sitting at this desk doing data entry and color correcting photos. And I mean, I guess that was the price I had to pay for the ability to come to Africa and do this. So cataloging will continue every year. There's a huge backlog, decades worth of backlog. And with excavations happening all the time, of course, more material will enter the museum. And the hope is to have it properly cataloged and documented as it comes in. Getting the objects photographed and cataloged was a huge accomplishment. We managed to get to 5,000 records done. But setting up the processes for how to do the cataloging efficiently and with controlled standards was even more important, and given how few staff and resources are available. The curatorial assistant especially was really empowered by this project. He was often just kind of left to his own devices, was never given any direction or training, and so him being able to be involved in helping set this up and then continue was really great. Now, we ran out of time to do the public lectures in Harare, and, you know, the other ideas for podcasts and websites also didn't happen, and part of that was a technology issue for sure. But I think we kind of bit off more than we could realistically achieve with our time and our budget. Yeah, I find sometimes with collection management and grant applications, it's seen as not enough, and more public things keep getting thrown onto the grant application. And, you know, and collections management's enough, you know. I think so. So Dr. Mercator returned the following summer in 2014 to dig. He also took three of our students to an international conference in South Africa, including two women. He's very passionate about supporting women in this field in Africa where they are really underrepresented. He reported that cataloging continued, albeit obviously at a much slower pace. Now, unfortunately, there were some issues this summer when he was in Zimbabwe, so it's very possible neither he nor I will be able to continue in Zimbabwe, unfortunately. You know, another story for the cocktail hour. So what would I do differently? I wouldn't worry so much about not having the information I wanted before I go. I mean, things really always do work out. I certainly wouldn't bother hauling archival boxes and rolls of tissue paper across two continents and an ocean. I would just buy standard boxes and poly bags and tissue paper in Zimbabwe or whatever country. They may not be archivally sound as I want them to be, but it's certainly better than nothing. So a few kind of closing thoughts. You really can't get overwhelmed with the enormity of the task and the lack of resources. You can't worry about the best practices. You know, you just have to do what you can. I think working in a really small museum with very few staff members prepared me really well for this kind of project. It was definitely one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. You know, as museum professionals, yeah, we can't necessarily help with things like HIV and Ebola and all the other serious problems that the continent of Africa faces. But there are a host of other projects for which we do have a wealth of knowledge and resources and African colleagues who would love to collaborate with us. I mean, it's just maybe some creative grant writing and something as simple as PDFs of museological and collections management information being mailed to the museums for their libraries. So I'm just going to, this is a really quick one, so I'm just going to close up here. And if anyone has any questions or want to kind of know what day-to-day life was like for me for the 5 weeks I was there, also a future project I'm involved with in Tanzania. I am here for the whole conference, and I'll be at the social events too, so please come find me. Thank you.